Hey guys, how you doing? This is Wade with Wade for Wireless, and today I wanted to give you some feedback from readers that got back to me on the feedback on Drugs, Morons, and Steel. I put out a post, I think it was only last week, Drugs, Morons, and Steel. And, you know, first off, I had no idea how many experts there were on pot. No idea. That's why I put links in there, because it's all I have to back me up. You know, I studied it online. As far as how long it stays in your system, I had like three or four websites that said about 30, 40 hours. And then someone else, well, you'll read it. I put the feedback in the blog, or else I'll read it to you. So if you didn't listen to that podcast, or you didn't read that blog post, Drugs, Morons, and Steel. It's the name of the post. I have a link in my blog at wadeforwireless.com or on wadesarver.com/podcast. So feel free to read that, or look at it, or listen to it. Just listen to the podcast. Make it easy on yourself. But back to this. Listen, I'm just going by what I read. I hear a lot of different things about pot. I have no idea how long it stays in your system other than what I read. They say about 30 hours, and then they say it's detectable, and that it could stay in there longer depending upon a urine test or a blood test. And with other drugs, like I hear cocaine is out of your system right away. I don't know anything about crack. I didn't look it up, but I guess crack's a little more common than I thought. If you drop acid or something like that, it depends how heavy you are. They say that stays in your stored fat cells for quite some time. That's why they say people have flashbacks on occasion, because it's stored in there, then eventually it breaks down and gets back into your system. But, you know, not a doctor, not a urologist. I don't do blood tests. All I know is what I read. That's all I know, guys. I'm trying to do you a favor here by this. So that was the first thing. Had no idea how many experts were out there on pot. And I'm not one of them. I'll be the first to admit it. Second, I had no idea that harder drugs were so rampant in the industry. That blows my mind. You know, I didn't realize. And I got feedback from everybody that said about, you know, they don't know anyone that does drugs. And then there's other guys that like, hey, I wish you guys only did pot. And they do crack and coke and so on. So, and I'll read a few of those. And third, so many people didn't really read the article. So many people read the headline and said, oh, you're making the industry look bad. You know, it's not like that. Guys, I'm not really a good writer. And I'm not saying I'm the best podcaster out there. But if you listen, if you read a little bit, you would understand that I'm trying to make a point. So what I'm trying to do is make a point what really happens in the field, one, and two, I'm trying to make a point that if something bad happens and they detect anything in your blood, it's going to reflect badly on you. Let's say if something happens to you, they're going to do a blood test. If something happens to one of your coworkers, one of your workmates, they're going to do a blood test on everybody. They just are. If they don't, somebody is at fault. It's just the way it is. OSHA is going to request it if something really bad happens. And I know with a lot of the near misses, that's why I'm still asking for your near miss stories. With a lot of the near misses, no one wants to report it, because right away they'll have to go through all this crap. And I get it. It's a waste of, in that case, you know, you feel like it's a waste of time. You feel like you're going through the rigmarole for no reason. And, you know, that's why I think some of these stories are better just shared privately. That's why I did the near miss thing. I didn't put anyone's name out there. I just like, you know, and I may have a few more of those to put out. I don't know. But if you have more, give me feedback. So, but that was the point of this. And if, as far as the morons go, if you ever worked on a job site and you didn't have some idiot in a job, God bless you, because that is something that I worked with a lot of idiots in my time. But with that said, there's a lot of classy, stand-up, brilliant people in the field. There are. You work with both kinds. I would be willing to bet no matter what job you had in your lifetime, unless you're like 16, you probably worked with complete idiots. And most of you, if you ever had a job at 16 and you're older now, you realize a lot of those people were complete idiots. It's just the way it is. So That's why I'm saying all this. You're going to have idiots on the job. You have to limit your hazards. So that was my point of that. So just think about it. Think about who you're working with and what you're working with. And granted, you know, there are so many things that could go wrong, you know. So many things. So if you have a guy that's on the job that's an idiot, why make him one of those things that could go wrong? Limit what he can do. If it's drugs in somebody's system, or somebody's hungover, or somebody's, you know, hyped up, you know, or you don't know, limit that hazard, you know. And if it's you, maybe you should limit yourself. Do you want to risk your reputation on the job or at work? Now, I'm talking about people that legitimately have problems out there and are doing things they shouldn't be doing. It's in the industry. And I'm not saying it's not in every industry, but what I'm hoping is that we have a group of professionals out there. That's the goal. If you act professional, you will command respect. If you're hardworking and you act professional, you will command respect. And there's outstanding people out there, outstanding human beings in the industry. I've interviewed a few of them, and I talked to many of them. I'm going to interview more. I just got to get it on schedule. A lot of these guys out there are just brilliant. And I always say in this industry, you have to be a jack of all trades and a master of some. You do. You have to really understand a lot of different jobs, because no one else is going to do it for you. You know, it's interesting with the phone company, and I don't know how many of you guys remember how phone companies were, but it's like this way with a lot of carriers too. Everyone has a specific job. So you have a guy that programs the numbers in the switch. You have a guy that basically connects the routing, I'm trying to think, connects the routing up for each number in the switch. You have a guy that basically does the routers for the Ethernet routing. You have a guy that does the RF work for the microwave. You have a guy that climbs a tower to align the microwave, that works with the engineer, that basically makes sure everything's set up. In other words, everyone has a specialty. Everyone has a niche. And when you're in the tower, you got to do it all. You got to do the fiber work, because they run fiber in the tower now. You got to terminate the RF connectors on the coax. That's you, unless you have pre-made jumpers. You have to mount everything. You have to put everything together. You have to know how to rig it. You have to know how to pull it in. You know how have to know how to, if it's a heavy load, to work either a heavy winch or a capstan winch. You have to know how it works. You have to know the strength of your rope. You have to know about knots. You have to know how to, not only how to tie the knots, but if you have a termination bar, you have to understand that. You have to know the strength of almost everything on there. Everything on there should be well over 1,500 pounds to 5,000 pounds and up. You have to understand all of that. You need to know so much to do this job. It's not an easy job. So you have to make a decision, and I said this before and I'll say it again. Are you a laborer or are you a professional? Because this industry could use more professionals. And before you answer that, I'll tell you what I'm going to compare it to. And a lot of you tower guys might get upset with this, but a lot of construction jobs are out there. I've done a few of them. So here's what you have. I don't know if any of you guys ever done masonry work. You have mason laborers and you have the mason. And when I was a kid, I did mason labor. When you do mason labor, you know what you do? You carry the blocks, you carry the mud, you mix the mud. You do all the dirty work and the mason lays the block. The mason lays a block because it's a skilled job, whether you believe it or not. They're supposed to know what they're doing, you know. So, and the mason labor can get into an apprenticeship to be a mason. Electricians, it's the same way. You have the labor who basically is going to do all the handing and running stuff, setting stuff up and getting everything ready for the electrician. You have the apprentice, who again is going to do a lot of the dirty work till he's an electrician. Then you have the electrician, you have the master electrician who can sign off on the work and inspect the work. You know, there's an hierarchy to how it's going to go. So that's what I'm trying to tell you guys. If you're going to be a laborer and this is only a summer job to you, I would make that clear to the guys on the crew, because they're going to put you on the ground, they're going to have you tagged, they might have you up in the air for some help, but they'll put you where you're needed. If you want to be a professional in the tower industry, Well, then I would let them know that too, because you're going to have to work your way up to where you get respect, to where you are considered a professional. And the reason so many guys get mad at me is because they think they're professionals, and they may or may not be. There are guys out there that don't have to say, you know, I'm a professional, I'm good at what I do, because their work speaks for it. They don't have to say it. Their coworkers say it. People that have worked with them say it. Customers say it. Their customers say it. So that's the difference. I'm not out there telling anyone I'm something special. If the customer thinks I'm special, great. That's good. I've done my job. If my boss thinks I've done something special, which in a lot of cases was a customer, great. If my coworkers think I'm doing good work, great. That's the plan. I've trained a lot of guys. I've trained a lot of successful guys, but I've been trained well too. And the guys that trained me were, quite frankly, a lot of outstanding people. A lot of guys I worked with. With that said, I worked with idiots too. But I remember the professionals. There are a lot of guys out there that just do great work. And there are a lot of guys that have strengths in different areas. Just because someone's not so hot up in the air doesn't mean they're not good working on a radio or doing alignments or configuration. Doesn't mean they're not good with fiber. You know, everyone has a strength. You could have a router guy that's his specialty. You could have a radio guy that's his specialty. You could have, a guy that does the shelter work and makes it look pristine. That's a specialty. You have a guy that does the work on the tower. Nothing comes loose. It looks great. Perfect job. That's a professional. All right. I think I harped on that long enough, so I got some feedback on the steel. I thought I'd start with that. I'm going to go in reverse order because I'll get you to hold on. But there were two guys that said things about steel. One guy said about working with lights, and this is more of a safety issue, probably something that I think is good to talk about. But he said, working with lights on the top of masts, there is rarely anything to tie off to. It's excessively difficult to work inside a flash head when the flash head is your only way to hang on. Now think about that. You're all the way at the top. You've probably seen those pictures on Facebook. And the guy's got whatever he's tied to, you know, he's got to stand up above the top. So guy's been climbing for 5 years, and that's the only time he gets scared for his safety is when he's at the top and he cannot work safely due to no tie-off points. And that's what I was talking about, guys. Tie-off points. We have to figure out how to tie off to some of these. And if you notice on some of the towers, they put a bar up so you have something to tie off to. They put it up right at the light, or maybe not quite above the light. Sometimes it's in the way. You know, some of those lights, you know, they have a hinge or they open up. It's really a pain in the butt when you have that bar up there. On the other hand, it's nice to have something to hold on to and to tie off onto. You know, your safety lanyard's probably at your feet because that's the only thing there is to tie off to, either your feet or your knees. Meanwhile, you're up working on the light. So, yeah, I get that. So this guy makes a lot of sense to me. So another comment I got was about a guy that talked about the guy wires. And you know what? I had two people actually get back to me about guy wires and saying that that's something people often forget to inspect. And I put some pictures in the blog. So you guys can see that, you know, they start to rust, they start to go bad. He sent me a bunch of pictures. I only put two in to save space, but maybe I'll put more in. But if rust is found, one guy says, everybody is forgetting that the guy anchors need to be inspected. If rust is found, please dig down to see if it is safe. He said, to see if it is safe, I have had to tie heads to heavy equipment, then do repairs, install new anchor to make the tower safe. In other words, he inspected the tower, realized that the anchor was probably a hazard assessment guys. Then what he did everything he could to avoid the hazard, which if you read on there, and when they were going to install a new anchor, he tied the heads to heavy equipment to do the repairs. So he avoided the hazard, he did the hazard assessment, found a way to work around the hazard, make the tower safe, and then made the change to make the tower safe. So he thought it through, he came up with a plan, he paid attention, he was safe, he came up with a plan, and he followed through. So just something to think about, guys. That's why I wanted to put that one first, that was pretty important. So I put drugs and morons together next. Drugs and morons. Let's move on to the drugs section. So I'm going to give you a few responses that I got back from the guys. And like I said, I'm no expert on a pot or any drug really. But here's a great response. I see you forgot to mention that THC metabolites can stay in your system for up to 90 days. So if I smoked legally on vacation in Colorado or Washington last month and I get drug tested at work, I would fail and lose my job, even though I was more aware and alert being sober than other workers who are on prescription drugs with a huge list of side effects. Or what about the guy who smokes meth or crack? The crap is out of your system in 1 to 2 days. That crap is out of your system, meaning the meth or crack. They would pass a drug test. If you want to test, do an impairment test. If you wrote, okay, I don't know who wrote this. That's a good saying. I don't know. I mean, I'm pretty impressed. I had no idea you could still detect it that long. So all I ask is whoever wrote that, just send me a few links to back it up, because that's a great statement. It's powerful. And that's a good point about crack or cocaine. I don't know. Or meth. He says meth or crack. Sorry, my bad. He says meth or crack. Yeah, if you could send me a link, I mean, that'd be awesome. That's something to think about, guys. Good Lord, 90 days. I had no idea. There's one for you. So here's another powerful statement. I'd just like to say that weed is probably the smallest problem when it comes to climbers doing drugs. It's just one that stays detectable in your system the longest. There are much bigger problems with heroin, crack, coke, meth, and the most widespread issue drug, alcohol. I would rather climb with a pothead than a drunk any day of the week. Weed is addressed all the time in terms of safety, while alcohol seems to be forgotten about. Someone who is hungover is much more likely to cause an accident than a pothead. And they'll pass a drug test almost every time. It's time as an industry, we start looking towards the individual who is actually responsible for the incident rather than the crew member who smoked some dope 3 weeks prior. We should be using drug tests to see who is more at risk instead of using them to place blame on an incident. Now, this response is really impressive, and I'll tell you why. It makes a lot of sense. There's a lot of great points. And I agree with what he's saying. By far, I don't think pot's a big deal. However, that wasn't my point. That's a great statement. Whoever wrote that, awesome statement. Powerful to me. I mean, to me, it was really a powerful statement because he's right. You have drunks. You have everything out there. And technically, in the drug test, they should test for alcohol. But I see what he's saying. If someone's hungover, I don't know if they're going to have alcohol still in their system. By the time they do a drug test, you know, it'd probably be a full day later. But I guess my point was, in the last article, if something happens and there's a fatality, lawyers are going to look for anything wrong they can not to pay as much as they have to. There's a point, you know, I worked with a lawyer years ago over some, I was in a paging company, and some bozo had a patent. Well, actually, here's what happened. A guy had a patent on answering machines, right? It wasn't on the machine itself, how it worked, or the electronics. The patent literally said that he would call on a phone to a number and a machine would record his voice, save the recording, and then you could call back in and retrieve the voice recording. And if you don't think that's an actual, I should have looked it up. You know, maybe I'll look it up and try to put a link in the blog. But a lot of patents are written like that. They're very vague. They could cover anything. Well, what happened was the guy that came up with that was a scientist, and he never sued anybody. He was a decent guy, I guess, from what I read. He was a Japanese scientist, if I remember right. I'll look it up. But anyway, what happened with this is that when he died, I guess the family was looking for money or whatever, and this law firm out of Colorado, and I can't remember who they are. I'm almost scared to put their name in there, but they thought, you know what? We see dollars here. So who'd they start suing? Panasonic. Back then, you got to remember, this was guys in the early 90s. There were still answering machines everywhere. And paging had voicemail. So what they did, they came up with a strategy. They went after anyone who made an answering machine first, which was Panasonic, Sony, and whoever else was around back then. And they went after them first. Then they went after the paging companies, because that's what it was. You called in, you left a message, you would get paged, and then you would call in and retrieve your message. And then their third strategy was to go after the cellular companies. Now, here's the thing. There's something called indemnification. And what that is, if we get sued for the way the machine works, which in this case was a Glenair GL3000, if we get sued for the way the machine works, we can automatically get the money from the company that built the machine and invented the machine, whatever, created, has rights to the machine, which in this case, the paging terminal was built by Glenair. So Glenair would have been sued. So Glenair tried to get in on the lawsuit. Well, the lawyers didn't really want that. They just wanted to settle out of court. They didn't want to go to court. And that's what they did with the answering machine companies like Panasonic, Sony, and so on. It's easy for them to settle out of court. It's easy money. You file the paperwork, you send it out, you make a lot of threats. And I'll never forget, I sat down with a lawyer when I was with the paging company I worked for at the time, and he said, the legal system is not about justice. It's about money. And he said, they're going to look at how much money we're willing to spend to make this go away. So what they would, what we would have done, our company, probably would have just, you know, said, well, what do you want to go away? Instead of suing for all this money, months in court, the company figured out what their legal costs would be and defending it and so on. They said, we'll just settle. So they had to cut their losses. And that's what it came down to. It came down to cutting their losses. That's what they had to do. And that's why the company, Glenair, got in on the suit, because all the paging companies started to band together to fight this law firm. And they really weren't going to fight it. I think they were just going to settle out of court. And they didn't all come together. There were a few that just said, what do you want? They just paid it. Obviously, they had a lot of money to spare. But so Glenair got involved in the suit. And then they took it over from there. You know, it was up to them to fight it. And they probably, I think they wound up settling it out of court, just paying them off, saying, what do you want? It's going to cost us money anyway. So they calculated how long it would last. They calculated what the legal fees would be. And the company that sued them came in a little less than that. And they, you know, they probably made millions. I don't know what it was anymore. I should probably Google that too, huh? But that's something that happens in the industry. And it became more about money. So I know I'm way off on a tangent here, but I'm bringing it back now. So the point of that whole story was, is that the legal system is about money, not justice. So when people go to court and somebody on the job site tested positive for anything, pot, whatever, let's say pot, because that stays in your system longest. This guy made a great point with his statement. So the first thing the lawyer that is going to try to save money is going to look at is that pot. And the first thing the lawyer that's trying to get more money is going to look at is that statement. So now the whole case, if it goes to court, is no longer about the problem, the accident, who's at fault, because automatically they see pot. That guy's at fault. They see drugs in somebody's system. And if it's someone who is deceased and it's in their system, the finger's getting pointed. And that's the point I'm trying to make. I know you guys want to make a stand and say, morally, this isn't right, this is how we should do it. But the reality is, guys, the reality as it is right now, maybe someday it'll change, but let's look at right now, this time in history. It's September 2014. Let's look right now in history. What's going to happen is, if you test positive for any drug, you are going to be labeled at fault, whether you did anything, whether you were even up in the air or not. So now suddenly, instead of, you know, being the one in, instead of not being at fault, you're at fault. You are the one at fault by default because they tested drugs in your system. I don't know how many times I got to say that to get it through your heads. I don't know why you guys don't get that. That's the point. I know everyone says it's not fair, it's not right, and it may not be. You know, I'm not going to argue with you morally. I'm just going to tell you how it is right here, right now. That's how it is, you know? I don't want to see anyone's reputation tarnished, and I don't want to see these cases any more clouded than they already are. I want to see a black and white answer as to why something bad happened. That's what I really want. And the minute you put any type of any drug failure, no matter what it is, anything that's tested positive out there at the site when something bad happens, the case is no longer about what happened. It's about what this guy smoked pot, this guy did whatever, this guy tested positive for whatever. And that's the point I'm trying to make. So I don't know if you understand that or not. I would like to think you guys get it. I'm not saying it's right. I'm not saying that's the way it should be. I'm not making a moral issue here. I'm just trying to explain the legal issue. That's legally how it's going to be looked at. In a court of law, that's how it's going to be looked at. That's what OSHA is going to focus on. And I'm not, actually, OSHA will probably give you a full report. They'll look at everything. But in the end, the minute they have that in their report, or somebody has that in their report, that's what people are going to look at. So just, you know, think about your reputation, think about the future, and put all the what-ifs into action. What if this? What if that? What if this? What if that? I hate living by what-ifs in a lot of cases, guys, but this is one. So, hey, I got another thing on LinkedIn. Somebody got back to me and said about, I'm going to quote it here. She said, they said, all safety-sensitive positions should be mandatory drug tested. Blaming the potheads gets you nowhere. Start at the top, I know, shocking, but when you implement proper procedures to manage your safety-sensitive employees, you will have people do things on their own time that will no doubt have an effect on others. Legally, you cannot test someone under federal law if they are employed and you have probable cause to test. Legally, you cannot test someone if under federal law they're employed? I don't know about that. It must be corporate policy. Oh, that's what you're saying. It must be corporate policy. Only corporate policy can mandate when a random test can take place. It's expensive, and today, employers are gambling with everyone by not following their own policies. It's not the pothead or the moron. It's the CEO not running the company. End quotes. So, the only response I have to that is I think drug testing is becoming more and more common, especially in this industry. It just is. I know the company I worked for did drug testing all the time, but I'll tell you why we did it. It wasn't exactly the choice of the company to clean everybody up in the company. It was because when you had in our case, we had a contract with the Maryland Public School System, and they required that we all have background checks every so often. I want to say 6 months or a year, and they looked at everything. You know, because obviously you don't want a child molester in your school. You know what I mean? I get that. But they did that. That's why we had the random drug tests. That's why we had a lot of background checks done. And you really maintain discipline when you do that. They look at a lot of things because they're going to allow you in their schools to do work. And I get it. You know, we put in some type of microwave backhaul for them. I don't know what it was, 100 megabit per second, something like that. But anyways, we connected up the school so they had a data backbone. At that time, fiber wasn't so common. So I know I've drawn the one here, went on a lot about drugs, but it seems to be a sensitive issue in the industry. It seems to be something where people really want to argue the morality. I don't want to argue the morality. Listen, guys, what you think's right, what you think's wrong, what you want to do in your own time, that is your business. My point is, when you work professionally, if something goes wrong or if you get tested, it's going to be bad. So now with that said, I hear a lot of these companies have been doing, this is totally off the record, but some companies are doing drug testing. And I hear a lot of guys got false positives. So I'll write another blog on that. But if you get a false positive, let me know. Fill me in. Give me a heads up. You know, I need to know that. You can do it anonymously. You know, I try to do a lot of this stuff anonymously because I really think the public needs to know what's going on. And by the public, I mean other tower climbers, other companies. And it just seems like this is how we can reach out and get the word out. All right. So, like I said, I got a lot of read my blog, listen to my podcast. I got books for sale. Support the Hubble Foundation. I'm a big fan of the Hubble. And when CTIA has their show, Nate's going to come out with another support program, which I hope is a success. I'm really counting on it being a success. And I don't know if you remember back when I did the Jet interview, Jet Hester, Dr. Bridget Hester, Jet, she runs the Hubble Foundation. She was excited to see another support foundation for tower climbers come up. So I think it's a good thing. I would like to see one group support the whole industry. I think it's great that we have multiple groups supporting the industry, and I want to support them 100%. So I think that's great. All right, guys. If you have any questions, leave comments. Wade for Wireless on Facebook, wadeforwireless.com, wadesarver.com/podcast. I'm still working on my websites and everything. Give me a review on iTunes if you can. I'd really appreciate it. Just to get the word out, you know, share what you can. I'd really appreciate that too. And I want all you guys out there to be smart, be safe, and pay attention. Pay attention to the plan. Pay attention to what you're doing. Pay attention to your workmates. It is very important that you arrive alive when you get home at night. That's very important. We all want to get home. And I know you guys get mad at me. I know a lot of you guys just outright hate me. But if you're listening to the podcast, hey, great. Go ahead and hate me. Just keep listening and reading the blog. But do me a favor. Just, guys, be smart. I'm trying to help here. And you guys deserve to know what's going on out there. And you guys deserve to have an outlet to let everybody else know what's going on. You know, let me know your pain points. Let me know where you need help. I'm doing the best I can. Again, I'm going to write another book. And the other thing I want you guys to know, there are career paths that you can choose. There are other ways for you to move ahead in this business that maybe you can change jobs someday. And I'll go into that in another podcast. All right? All right. Be smart. Be safe. Pay attention. Arrive alive when you get home at night. All right? You got families. And for if nothing else, you got your workmates who need you. All right, guys. Take care.